Welcome, listeners, to our second series of the Student Accommodation Podcast, brought to you by City Room Rentals, a leading student housing platform and agency partner. I'm Nick Findlay, and on today's episode, we're continuing to change up the format to bring you shorter, bite-sized interviews, with this particular episode looking at res life, which is very timely with a new intake of student residents arriving across the country this September. Thank you to today's sponsors, Y-First, the European Wi-Fi leader, with over 17 years of experience and over 1,900 residences deployed across Europe. I'm delighted to welcome on today Rebecca O'Hare. With over a decade of experience in the student accommodation sector, Rebecca has recently embarked on a new venture with Student First Group as our Head of Partnerships and Resident Experience. You may remember from Series 1 we had on Richard to discuss the design, build and finance operating models, and the group has some exciting plans for the sector. Rebecca's over 4 years' experience with campus living villages previously and showed a particular talent for tailoring of resident life experience to each student and was recently awarded Resident Life Professional of the Year 2019. So, without further ado, we're delighted to welcome Rebecca onto the podcast today. Welcome on the show, Rebecca, and thanks for coming on to share your expertise with us today.
No problem. Thank you, Nick. Great to be here.
Great. Well, Rebecca, perhaps we can just take a sidestep quickly and just have a quick chat about your exciting new start with Student First Group. How is the first couple of weeks going? What's the role going to entail?
No problem. Well, I'm 1 week in and it's been a fantastic week. Straight into it, which makes me really happy. Already heading up a big project already with a focus on student mental health. And so it's going to be a really exciting role, I think, and was really excited when Rich approached me to see if I'd be interested in making the leap and joining the Student First Group. So my role will essentially work to consult with their UK and European partners to help them improve their student experience res life offering, whether they are 5-10 years into that or looking to essentially start up from scratch. And I found myself over the last couple of years that I've been approached on numerous occasions by lots of different people in terms of PBSA and universities who've been interested in developing res life models or student experience programs, and essentially knowing, you know, where do I start, how do I engage students, how do I get them to feel like they're part of a home and a community. And a lot of the work I will do with Student First Group will aim to do that.
Brilliant. Well, Rebecca, that kind of leads nicely. I mean, can we kick off perhaps and get your take on res life and perhaps how you define it and live and breathe it in the sector and perhaps what you feel it encompasses?
Sure. My own experience in res life is quite varied. I have experience running res life programs in the university setting and obviously more recently, like you just alluded to, with Campus Living Villages, where I headed up their program for the last 4 years. So I've got a quite mixed bag of experience because it is different in how it operates in university and how it operates in private accommodation. And I think it's important to say that from the offset. My own passion over the last couple of years is developing res life student experience programs that are tailored for purpose-built student accommodation. And that looks different everywhere. And it looks different in terms of how much buy-in that provider will have. So if it's important to the decision makers at the top, it'll be important to the village teams and it'll be important then for the residents. And everybody kind of dips in and out of it. Some people run just the student experience side of it. Some people delve a bit more and focus on well-being. And some people look at the pastoral side and disciplinary side of things as well. But when I try and define res life for university, there's essentially three main pillars. One is the student experience, but the fun, the welcome events, things that you see a lot on social media. Another side would be the welfare, the holistic well-being of the student. And the third pillar would be the disciplinary side of it. So when things aren't going so well, there's dedicated staff to deal with the antisocial side of things and tackle those issues that come up day to day. So in the UK, it essentially looks like that. But then if you look at North America and countries like that, it's far more diverse and they're certainly ahead of the game over there. And I would get a lot of my inspiration from what they do in that side of the world as well.
Good. I follow you quite closely on Twitter, Rebecca, which is really, really interesting. I noticed you were across for a recent conference. Was it in Canada, sort of on the student
stuff?
How did that go?
It was fantastic. I was very lucky because I had won the Cubo Award, which was amazing. And part of that award was to go to the QI conference. And believe it or not, I'm quite sad. I've got a conference bucket list and a QI was on that bucket list. So I got to tick that box this year. So I headed over and it had been said to me in advance, you know, look after yourself. It's very intense. Practice self-care. And I thought, yeah, I've done conferences. I can do it. But I did the study tour, which is, you go around Canada. And we went to 9 universities around the Toronto area in advance of the conference. And then the conference goes on for like 4 days. So it's essentially 8 days back to back, early starts, late evenings. But you know what? If you go there with the attitude to embrace it and meet new people, you will get so much from it. And I certainly came back thriving and full of ideas and very, very motivated by it.
Brilliant. That sounds excellent. And Rebecca, there you were just touched very briefly on a sort of project, a student mental health project. Now, I was just looking at some recent articles and according to sort of the recent National Student Housing Survey, around about 80% of respondents in the UK said their accommodation is having a direct impact on their overall sense of well-being. Perhaps what are some of your observations on the link between accommodation and student well-being and obviously that RES life delivery?
I think what's important to note is that the sector is changing in terms of the role that accommodation plays and what people think it plays. I think in previous years, numerous quite senior people in organisations, whether it's purpose-built student accommodation or in universities, we have thought that accommodation doesn't really play a role. You know, the role of staff there is to sell the room, collect the rent, make sure there's not much debt, and that's it. Student checks in, student checks out. But what people are starting to realise now, thankfully, and myself as a former village manager with 6 years operational experience, will know that you wear many hats in that role. You are not just someone selling rooms and collecting rental fees. One day you might be wearing a hat that is a bit of a counselling role. The next day you're dealing with the antisocial side of things. You might feel you've got a bit of a policing role. And you really do see every side of the student from start to finish through that entire journey, whether they're a first year student, whether they're a postgrad student or an international student. And that's why RES Life is so important, that we have well-trained staff who understand what it is to be a student today from many, many countries, many, many demographics, and have the skill set to support them as and when they need it. RES Life staff aren't essentially counselling staff, although many of them may have mental health first aid training and can effectively signpost and put safe plans in place for students if and when they need them. But given the demands on students now and the expectations they have of themselves, in combination, we see quite a lot of difficulties and problems that they are facing.
Okay. And with that then, Rebecca, so we have touched on very briefly on previous episodes with Tim and from Redbrick and also Bobby from GSA about perhaps, you know, linking some of the KPIs on operational procedures to RES Life delivery. What's your thoughts on this and, you know, how it might influence sort of future discussions, perhaps in your new role with universities and, you know, maybe discussing partnerships? Do you think it'll be a big, not a big selling point, but I suppose it would give the universities some comfort, I suppose, if it's more engaging?
I think it will become more and more important. I've been asked quite a lot over the past couple of years, how do you know what you're doing is good? How do you measure the impact of your RES Life or student experience programme? In PBSA, I think that's more difficult to do. And it's certainly more difficult if you are a direct let and you haven't got nominations agreements in place with the university. If you are a university offering a RES Life programme, you can, and they certainly do a lot of this in North America, is they will tie up their surveys and benchmark it against how students are performing at universities. So they've got access to data. So, for example, if a student is part of a RES Life programme or a living learning community, they can look at students who are involved in those programmes, see how they're performing at university, and then benchmark it against students who are not involved in those programmes. And time again, students who are actively involved in RES Life programming, who are involved in events or activities, generally perform better by a couple of percent and are more likely to be retained and not drop out of university, which is quite important. In PBSA, slightly more difficult. You can ask questions on your survey about, you know, are you participating in our programme? Certainly, Campbell and Village, we did that. And over the last couple of years when I worked there, we saw an increase year on year in the amount of students participating in the programme. And we could share that with our university partners. Equally, if there was a village that wasn't performing that well, you could speak with that village and put a plan in place and work to improve that and try and identify why that was by talking to the students and getting their feedback, which is really important too. If you are a PBSA with nomination agreements in place, you can work in partnership with that university to try and put a series of questions together or surveys or ways to measure how well that programme is doing. But yeah, we do need to get better at how we look at the impact of RES Life and the impact of these programmes, so that we can prove to the powers that be and to keep the funding going, because that's really, really important, that they are important, they have a place and they are valuable to the student themselves.
Yeah, no, I could understand some of the challenges as well. Getting a measurable, or how you measure that impact as well, can be quite challenging sometimes.
Absolutely. But
no, that's great. And with that then, Rebecca, you know, with universities, how do you find, or in your experience in your previous roles, sort of say if it was a nomination agreement, how do you find that sort of RES Life delivery, mental health, you know, practices and tying in with universities? Because we've obviously, there are different service levels and offerings at the university to that of PBSA. So does it require a bit more joined up thinking, perhaps more collaboration between the two? What would be your thoughts?
It absolutely requires more joint thinking, that's for sure. And certainly more communication on the subject. Often, I think in previous years, a lot of people worked in silos. So maybe the students' union was doing their own programme for intake. Maybe the counselling team or the welfare team was doing their own programme. The accommodation team, if they had accommodation on campus, was doing something else. And then the PBSA was kind of left to their own devices. But over the last couple of years, we would get approached more and more by partners and said, okay, what can you do to support us on the goals that we have for our programme throughout the academic year, not just at intake? And so those conversations were happening more and more. Equally, if you're a PBSA and you are trying to run a programme, you should reach out to your partner or reach out to the universities where your students are studying at, regardless of if you have a nominations agreement in place or not, and try and set up something and try and collaborate, because if anything, it would be cost effective for both of you. You can work together on the funding of that and get more students involved for those who are on campus and off campus as well. And those conversations need to happen sooner and earlier in advance of the academic year. So I would generally start these conversations 6 months before intake. So at CLV, when we planned our first 6 weeks programme, we were having those conversations in January and February of this year to ensure that we'd spoken to many people as possible and they knew that we were open to collaboration and working together, and that what we did was never in competition with what they were trying to do. It was always collaborative and it was always about showcasing what the university was doing just as much as what the PBSA was doing as well.
And in the sector then, Rebecca, you know, with your, you know, observations of it, there are numerous operators now that are operating within the space, and more people are talking about RES Life. It's the buzzword. But are we seeing, you know, actual good delivery of programs, or as a, you know, in some cases, is this being used as a marketing tool, you know, to either to promote to universities or to parents, or is there a big swing between what you're seeing across the market?
I think some are using it as a marketing tool, but if you dig a little deep, it's pretty easy to see who is doing it really well for the right reasons and who isn't. But there is more and more conversation, I think. I've been, you know, a couple of people that have spoken to me or conversations at conferences about wanting to do it better and what that looks like. But I think people also underestimate the amount of labour it can take and dedication that it needs, the consistency it needs. It has to have adequate staffing in place, whether that's students in resident assistant type roles, whether it's dedicated staff like myself. Across PBSA, there's only about maybe three people and three providers who have national positions who oversee RES Life student experience programmes. So CLV had myself, obviously GSA would have Bobby, United Students would have someone like Jenny Shaw and her team. And that's it, really. After that, in other PBSAs, it essentially is left to the teams to deliver and decide what it is they want. And I think the success of what that looks like depends on how enthused they are by it, yeah, and whether the PBSA itself places importance on it. So what's the message from them? Are they saying, here's the budget, off you go, we don't really care what you do as long as you do something? And then you might have another one that will just use it as a tick the box exercise. But it absolutely can't be a tick the box exercise if you are serious about it and you do understand its value and want to make a difference.
Yeah.
And just going back to some stats again, Rebecca, we've come across the Institute for Public Policy Research, so a recent quote that said 5 times as many students as 10 years ago have disclosed a mental health issue to their university. What's your take? Do you think it's true, you know, we're having more mental health issues these days, or are we just perhaps, you know, talking about it more?
I think we're talking about it more, which is great. There's less stigma, but also at the same time, there are more and more students who are self-diagnosing, whether it's, you know, they feel they have anxiety or depression, which is obviously more serious. We're seeing a rise in more students undertaking more serious activities like self-harm. Unfortunately, attempted suicide is an issue as well as actual suicide. But, you know, you've got to put that against the increased pressures that they are facing with the increased fees, more competition to get a role, to be the best, pressure from parents or family, and a pressure that they put on themselves seeing what their peers are doing and that whole rise of perfectionism and from what they're seeing on social media. Certainly when I was a village manager back in 2008, 2013, I was not seeing the level of mental health issues that we're seeing now and was reported back from teams that I was working with. So it has increased year on year. Okay. But also the teams I worked with felt that they were getting to students sooner because they had a Res Life programme. So by running events and activities, no matter how big or how small, and it wasn't necessarily the events that had 1,000 people at them, it could be events where there's 10 people at it. Students were disclosing earlier that they felt that they weren't settling in, that they hadn't met anybody yet, that they were feeling a bit homesick. And so they were able to get to them sooner, which was really important. And, you know, can you then say that that's contributed to preventing an issue down the line? No, not really. But it means they are identified sooner and they can be signposted sooner to the services that they need.
And with that then, Rebecca, with these, you know, the next few weeks across the sector, there'll be a lot of professionals tuning in an operational capacity. How critical is the sort of opening, you know, 4 or 5 weeks of the students moving in, settling in, making sure they're interacting? Perhaps you could just give us some of your experiences and practical tips, maybe, what you would suggest.
It's really critical. The first 6 weeks are extremely important because there's a plethora of research out that says that if you don't engage students in the first 6 weeks, they'll never engage with you, whether that's someone in the university, like an academic or a member of the SU, or somebody in student accommodation. So if a student is feeling a bit overwhelmed and not settling in and finding it difficult to navigate that transition from home to university or from secondary school to university, it's really important that as many people as possible reach out to them. So if you think of it, you know, as numerous touch points, because, you know, every university wants to retain as many students as possible. There is a loss in income if those students do depart, as well as there being a loss of income to the accommodation itself. For myself, in Campus Living Villages, we had the first 6 weeks programme, where at a minimum, we had one event every week in the first 6 weeks. However, as the programme progressed over the last 4 years and the teams built up their skill set and their confidence and their excitement for the programme, what it resulted in was generally that most villages would run a minimum of 10 up to 25, 30, 40 events in the first 6 weeks. And a number of that was in collaboration with their university partner if they had a partnership in place. A lot of that might be by them running the programme themselves. But at the same time, I, as a Res Life professional and as someone who has operations experience, would have to acknowledge that that team has done an awful lot of hours in the run-up to checking in those students, and they too themselves are tired. So it's not about pushing it and stretching them to the limit. It's about doing what is the minimum amount we can do, but actually what's going to make the maximum impact for those students as well. And so partnerships are really important with regard to that. But also we had lots of student help as well. We had resident assistants in numerous villages. We had students who were returners who came back year on year. If there are students that you know, and everybody has them in every accommodation, who will regularly engage with you, who will suggest ideas, who will come to reception to talk most days, they're the students who want to be involved. You can reach out to them and say, listen, do you want to volunteer for the next couple of weeks? Or you can give them a paid position for a couple of weeks. And we did that. We had welcome ambassadors in numerous properties year on year, and that was always really popular. And they were generally the students who, for them, the big nights out, the big fresher weeks activities was not for them. They were more excited and more settled by running and being involved in small scale activity and looking out for those students who were a bit like them and didn't want to go to the big large scale fresher activity, which is typical of most first year experiences.
And it's such a valid point there, Rebecca. You know, I think sometimes, you know, outside of operational capacity, people forget how hard the site teams actually do work in that build-up. So, you know, you perhaps have a checkout for the last academic year, you know, a week turnaround straight into perhaps a summer commercial program, and then a week to turn around the building again, and you're straight back into, you know, the next academic cycle and, you know, getting the students inducted. So it can be a stressful time of year, busy, you know, and it's, it can be quite a long period. But, you know, some good tips there. What would be your thoughts on technology then, Rebecca? How, you know, it's obviously been a great benefit to society, if you like, over the last, you know, 20 years. But obviously it's not without its cost. You know, we're seeing the rise of technology making people more, I suppose, isolated. You know, many lectures are now recorded, coursework submitted online. You know, what sort of risk, if any, do you think the community, you know, Res Life programs face, you know, when this type of technology is integrated?
I guess the biggest risk at the moment for a lot of Res Life programs and professionals in the sector is just trying to engage residents and get them to come down and participate in event activity, no matter how big or small it is. A lot of people ask them that question, is how do you get students to come to your programs? And the short answer is, you know, who is running your program? How passionate are they about that? Because that actually makes a huge difference. If you have team members who are passionate about the program, who will tell students about it face to face, when they come to reception to collect those many, many parcels, they will come to your program and they will participate. But in terms of technology, we do have to meet them where they are. We do have to advertise the program by technology, by sending, you know, email updates and quarterly newsletters, by perhaps if you're a PBSA with an app where you can record maintenance issues, advertising the program that way. But at the same time, you can resort to, you know, traditional methods of like putting posters up or maybe doing digital signage. And like I said, word of mouth is really, really important as well. I did find in my own experience being a village manager and saw that increasing year on year, you know, students isolating themselves more in their accommodation and maybe not leaving their room for hours and then because they were gaming or they're on their phone or they're perhaps watching Netflix or whatever it is they're watching. And so if you have student professionals working in your accommodation, whether it's resident assistance or peer-to-peer support, you know, they need to go out and about and knock on doors and talk to students that way. When I was over at a QOI, there was a fantastic campaign that took place at a university, which was created in response to an increase in mental health issues that they had seen, where they would, every quarter, they would aim to knock on every door and talk to every student and ask them how they were settling in. And it became so popular that the president of the university then got involved and would come along to the accommodation and talk to the students and let them know they were important and ask how they were progressing in their studies. And that became a really popular campaign in that particular university in Toronto. So things like that, by, you know, encouraging and finding more innovative ways for human to human contact, going back to basics, is important. And getting out from behind the desk, not always easy when you are working in accommodation given your day-to-day operational duties, and we all know that things just come up day-to-day and there can be incidents that happen day-to-day. But if you can get out there and talk to them face-to-face as much as possible, doing really innovative ways of doing that, then that would certainly contribute.
Brilliant. Some great, great practical advice there, Rebecca. Thank you. We're going to be back with Rebecca very shortly. We're just going to take a short ad break now to thank our sponsors, Why First. This series of the Student Accommodation Podcast is sponsored by Why First, a historical provider of Wi-Fi managed services for student accommodations. Regardless of whether you're in the hospitality, senior, student housing industry, you know that a great Wi-Fi connection is a fundamental need for your customers. Why First is a leader in managed Wi-Fi services for PBSA with 17 years of experience and over 1,900 residences deployed across Europe. Trust the European Wi-Fi leader for your next turnkey solution, contacting them on whyfirst.com/EN. Okay, we're back. I was on a recent student accommodation conference where I was sitting on the panel, and the sector was challenged by the NUS around the affordability of the sector, the link between this and rising costs, you know, and negative impacts around student wellbeing. It's a question that we put across to a number of guests on the podcast series. But what's your thoughts, perhaps from a different angle, on the affordability question? you know, how are you seeing this impacting students? You know, perhaps just give us your take.
I think the sector needs to start looking at innovative ways to try and reduce the costs of student accommodation. And I think there's certainly scope for a budget type model. I know there was conversations among numerous student professions about this over the last year or two, certainly I've had with them. But I think there is scope for some sort of budget type model that's not all frills. You know, we're still building extremely fancy student accommodation with its gyms and equipment and social spaces, which of course are important. But really, is everything in those spaces essential? Is that really needed? Probably not. You know, really high spec, high end stuff is still going up all around the country. And now we're seeing that in other parts of the world as well. So I think we need to look at some sort of alternative model that caters to those students who aren't from wealthy families, who don't get as much in terms of student loans or grants, who can afford a place in nice accommodation and can actually enjoy the university experience just as much as the next person. And of course, you know, many universities will have widening participation agendas, and not all those students are fortunate enough to be able to afford that kind of accommodation as well. So we need to ensure that we're considering those students as well. I have seen over my time some amazing student accommodation, but like I said earlier, not all of those fancy spaces are needed. Bowling alleys, is that essential? I don't think so right now. Swimming pools, are they essential? Probably not. Can we take away those costs and actually work towards lowering the weekly rental fee for students? I think definitely that can be done.
Yeah, okay, good. It's always a difficult question, I think, Rebecca, and it's always nice. I always pose it during the questions to get, you know, a varied take, but I don't think it's going to be, you know, something that's going to be solved imminently. I think a couple of points guests have put back as well is, you know, affordable to, you know, one person or one student, you know, may not be affordable to another, and, you know, vice versa. So it's, yeah, it can be a difficult challenge. I personally feel, it is a high cost. You know, they are getting extra services for it, and it obviously varies dramatically across the country. But, you know, there's a demand for it, and, yeah, it's proving very, very healthy. But, yeah, it's a challenging question for sure.
Yeah, I'd say it's also quite a fine balance as well, because, you know, on the other side of it, from the operations side of it, I've worked at many open days, and, you know, you see students come in and they're extremely excited by beautiful accommodation and an ensuite and all that comes with that. And so they want the best. They want that experience. And I completely get that. But they haven't got the experience yet of trying to manage their budget and their loans and their grants and everything else they get. And maybe haven't got a sense of what they can afford themselves or what their family can afford.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe there's more work that can be done in terms of teaching them sooner about this is the reality of going to, you know, going to university, living in student accommodation, and really planning in advance, spending more time looking at what you can afford, so you're not getting your hopes up too high, and then can be a bit more realistic about what you can do. But equally, the sector needs to meet them halfway and offer a broader range of accommodation.
Yeah. On a different note, Rebecca, sort of a lot of the focus on residence life is, you know, from my observations, supporting students perhaps before and during their stay in student accommodation. So it's got a large support network, community feel to it. You know, some cases it's slightly isolated, I would say, from sort of outside general community. But how does this prepare, do you feel, sort of young adults for life out with PBSA? So we're doing these wonderful Res Life programmes. How do you feel? Do you feel this sets them up well for life after PBSA, or do you feel like potentially that support network would be taken away and, you know, they're kind of in a limbo land, if you like, for a little bit? What would be your take?
So a well-funded, strong resident life programme will offer a breadth and depth of activity. It won't be just events for events' sake. Really strong programmes will be underpinned by a model, and normally that model will be informed by something like student development theory. So the own framework and model I developed at Campus Life and Villages was very much informed by a lot of academic research and underpinned by that. And so the program that we had there, which was, you know, providing a space for live, learn, grow, had loads of subcategories. So when the team were planning their program, it wasn't just, oh, we'll have a barbecue and maybe we'll do a hot chocolate night and maybe we'll do this. There was always a big focus on why are you doing this? What's the purpose of this? What will students learn from this? How will you know they have learned that? What will they get from it? And we would look at the student journey. What time was it in the academic year? Was it the exam period? Was it check-in? Were they getting ready to go home for the holidays, was it close to checkout, and tailor the program around that. But also we would get feedback and information from the teams and say, what are the challenges in your property? Do you have high levels of antisocial behaviour? Is this a particular issue in your village but not in the other one, and why is that? And tailor the program to address those issues in subtle and not so subtle ways, so that it was teaching residents about, this is how you live in our community. It's not all about, you know, throwing the rule book at them, but teaching them really creative ways about how to be part of that community and be a productive member in that community, but also to learn some skill sets around being a really good student and performing the best you can at university. So, you know, a lot of people will do this stuff. We certainly weren't the inventors of this, even though CLV had been running programs since 2003 over in Australia. So they certainly were doing it longer than anybody else. But, you know, I would have a lot of exam focused programs. We would have volunteer weeks. We would have companies come in to talk to them about life after university, so job fairs and things like that. So a well thought out program will do that, but it's got to be underpinned by a model that helps the team understand why they're doing what they're doing and puts a bit of focus to it as well.
Yeah, got to be a purpose and a plan. Yeah, and Rebecca, perhaps to sort of finish up on a sort of final question, would you be able to offer, you know, some further wisdom, best practice to the audience? You know, as I said, many of them are in operational roles day to day with students, so it'd be great to get best practice. Perhaps you can offer suggestions how you'd make a really positive difference in the res life delivery. What would you love to see across the sector?
I would love to see improved recruitment of student accommodation professionals generally. I think when you compare it to North America, when you look at the UK and how you recruit professionals to work in PBSA, there's a massive reliance on the hospitality sector, which is absolutely fine. They have got lots of skills to bring to student accommodation. And with the rise of student accommodation, it's getting more and more competitive to get the best people. And people are moving from PBSA to PBSA or from PBSA to university and vice versa. So people are keen to get the right people. When we look at advertisements for, say, the role of accommodation manager, they're heavily focused on property, on managing the asset, on selling rooms and collecting rental fees and health and safety of that asset as well. There is very, very little focus or responsibilities outlined in those ads that focus on the student and the well-being of the student and what that role will entail. Whereas if you look at advertisements for similar roles, normally called residence director in the US, for example, 90% of that advertisement and the position description will focus on looking after the student. It will talk about welfare, disciplinary, student experience, and a tiny amount will talk about looking after the asset. Now, it may be that they have like separate teams to do that, but I think we need to turn that on its head a little bit and start looking at ways in which we can recruit more people from other sectors, not necessarily hospitality. And certainly I came from an arts background, so I didn't even come from hospitality myself. But I think we can attract other people to the sector who have perhaps more empathetic skills, who can really, really work well in student accommodation, would quite enjoy it actually, and perhaps reduce the turnover of staff, because there is quite a high turnover of staff, either going to one of the competitors or universities or leaving the sector itself, because when they get there, they go and they say, I didn't realise this is what the role was like. I didn't realise I was going to have to wear all those hats I spoke about earlier, be a counsellor or be a warden or be almost like a police officer. But I think if we work better to recruit better and then induct them better, it's really important, we'll see a bit more stability in that.
That's a great, great take, Rebecca. It's no, I have to agree with the recruitment generally across the sector. As you say, it has been heavily reliant on the hospitality sectors, you know, coming into PBSA. Well, Rebecca, thank you for coming on today, giving us your expertise and sharing the best practice. If any of the listeners would like to connect with you, how's best to go about it?
Well, I think many people will know, you will know, I'm not shy on social media, so you can, Twitter is always the best way, so @Rebecca_ResLife, or equally on LinkedIn as well, or you can drop me an email, Rebecca@sfg.ltd.
Brilliant. Well, thanks again, Rebecca. I'd also like to extend our thanks to our listeners for tuning in. We do hope you'll join us for the next instalment. This series of the Student Accommodation Podcast is sponsored by WiFirst, the historical provider of Wi-Fi managed services for student accommodations. Regardless of whether you're in the hospitality, senior, student housing industry, you know that a great Wi-Fi connection is a fundamental need for your customers. Trust the European Wi-Fi leader for your next turnkey solution, contacting them on yfirst.com/en.